Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Maroon Friday edition of the Yard. Later than I wanted to be, but it's one of those days, right? Working through book edits, we've got proofs back on the majority of the book. And so we'll finish up everything this weekend, and then they'll put the file together, send it off to print. If you haven't pre-ordered, you should, at dutynoblebook.com. And I'm happy to say this book is going to be submitted for some awards. That my publisher really believes in the book. We cover a lot of ground. You know, Duty Noble lived a short life in many respects, but lived through some very eventful times in the United States and the world. World War I, the Great Depression, World War II, you know, worked through all that, civil rights movement. We address all of those things. And I've unearthed some things that I think are rather significant, some things about Duty Noble's life that perhaps haven't been told for generations. And some of these stories are over 100 years old. So I'm happy to bring those to you. And I'll be honest with you. I'm at a point now, I'm ready to be done. I'm not sick of it, but I'm ready, you know, to get this thing off the print and get it on the shelves. Very excited about the book. Of all the books that I've written, this is book number 7. This is the one I'm most proud of. And my wife always says, well, you always say that. Well, yeah, it's a different sense of pride, though. Because this is a book that I think really shares some insight into who Duty Noble was and why he was worthy of the naming rights of our baseball stadium. And so I think it validates him in many respects. And also shows, too, some very, very difficult times in Mississippi State athletics. Very, very difficult. And reading through the book, it makes me even more proud, but it also wishes that I had more time to add even more context to some of this stuff. Because some of these stories, you know, like us playing LSU in Alabama, right? I'd love to be able to dig into that and find out why we did play those games in their venues so often. I know why, but I'd love to be able to unearth some documents if they still exist. You know, what's interesting about that, too, is like when I'm sitting there holding Alan McKean's handwritten letter of resignation in my hands, I don't think there are people at Mississippi State that knew that document existed. You know, so there's a lot of stuff out there tucked away in closets and things like that and under beds and, you know, in storage facilities and things like that that are really a part of our history. And fortunately, I've been able to find some of that. And so it inspires me to do more of that sort of thing. And the first thing that everybody always asks me, say, Steve, what are you working on next? Well, I'm going to take some time to enjoy this. I'm going to take some time to enjoy this book cycle and this book tour. And we'll do a lot of game day signings and things of that. We'll certainly have it out for the holidays. We're looking at probably a September, you know, release date. The good thing is this, that the file that, you know, that basically as we've gotten through edit, things have been sent to the typesetter. And so all that's done, we get the proofs back and a few things you got to clean up always. And even with that, no matter how meticulous you are in your work, you're going to miss something because we're only human. That's the beauty of the first edition, right? But nevertheless, eager to get that thing out to you. I guess I've got 5 chapters left. Everything else is done. The first 20 chapters, the intro, the, you know, the preface, the epilogue, the acknowledgments, all that stuff has already been done and ready, you know, to head off to print once the proofs are approved. And so everything will be sent off next week. It'll take about 6 weeks to get it printed. And you never know, right? I mean, we're hoping for late August, early September. But you know, until we get a release date, we don't know for sure, right? The good thing is we no longer have a national paper shortage that we did when Dogpile came out. That book right there, it drives me crazy. Probably cost us a few copies, you know. I got everything done by the end of August with the understanding we'd have it out for October, early November, and then we didn't get it out till February. And people are like, hey, it's great, though. It's beginning of baseball season. Well, you know, you missed a holiday rush. And there's really 2 times you want to release books. For the holidays and then for the beachcomber season, right? So you want to do it in spring or you want to do it for the holidays. And so we were kind of in the middle of both of those events. So it is what it is. But, if you like reading or if you love Mississippi State, this is a book I think you need to have. So be sure and check it out. And we'll have it in your hands soon. And I'm eager to get your reviews. Eager to get your reviews. Because every single story, every chapter has an anecdote or a major story that chances are you're not aware of. And this is our history. And it is the most thorough and detailed book that I've ever written. So there you go. If I don't win awards for this one, I probably never will. That's how I feel. And I don't just say that out of arrogance or self-delusion. You know, the people that are involved in the production of this book feel the same way I do. And so some very, very heartwarming stories in there, too. You know, not just all about sports. There's some human interest stuff in there, too, that I think you'll find of real interest, especially, you know, around World War II. You know, I think that's pretty significant. There's some things that happened, some names that you know, there's maybe some names you don't, and some stories about them that perhaps needed to be shared that haven't been in a long, long time. So here we are. And some things that are unique that have never been shared publicly before. Probably one of the chapters I'm most proud of is around the Babe McCarthy era. You know, some things that happened, I'm kind of hinting at some of that, some things happened, and we're able to kind of maybe assign the full blame on the right parties, really for the first time. And that's an honor of which that I will never, ever, 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 ever be ungrateful for. Hey, Bulldog Burger Company, that's your one-stop shop when you get ready for dining. I had that Bulldog Burger Company for lunch. I told you guys I was going to get in there for dinner. Just wasn't able to pull it off last night working through book edits. And I did it for lunch and had the spring rolls. And so if you see me looking a little bit better than usual, you'll know why. And to be honest with you, I got the Bulldog today. I just wasn't quite sure what I wanted. I said, you know, you can't go wrong with the Bulldog Burger. So I got the Bulldog Burger with fries. Didn't finish it. I've saved it. I'll polish it off for dinner. That's the thing I love about Bulldog Burger Company. Not just the quality of service and the meal that I'm going to get. The portions are so incredibly substantial. I mean, it really, really is great. You get so much more for your money at Bulldog Burger Company. And that's the thing that I think about, too. There's so many things in life these days. We talk about inflation. You know, we talk about all these courtesy charges and things like that. That's just not the case at Bulldog Burger Company. I always leave there fulfilled, knowing that I made a good decision with my dining dollar. And you should, too. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Again, have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. And enjoy the delicacies of that fine restaurant-quality hamburger. And again, I got the Bulldog. And if you're a newbie, I'm going to suggest you go that route first. But once you kind of get your feet under you, maybe let's go get the Smokehouse. Maybe let's get the Mission. But I get the Pico de Gallo on the side. You know my policy about uncooked onions. You may love them. I married a woman that does too, which is kind of weird. But, you know, you never know how life's going to work out for you. Maybe you're an onion person. Maybe you are. Maybe you're not. I'm not judging. But no matter how you like it, you can get it that way at Bulldog Burger Company. The place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. All right. Let's talk a little bit about basketball recruiting. Huge, arguably the biggest commitment of the Chris Jans era at Mississippi State. You said, but Steve, we got Josh Hubbard. Yeah, might be even better than that. Yeah, it's true. You know, Josh Hubbard's a guy that a lot of people are excited about. And we kind of got him, you know, secondary, right? You know, we got him after he had signed with Ole Miss. And no matter when we got him, you know, he's the face of our program. But, huge decision yesterday is a 2026 Ladarius Given chooses Mississippi State over Alabama, Jackson State, LSU, Ole Miss, and others. And most people have him ranked, you know, top 50. You know, one of the top 50 players in the country. Now, 247 has him as a 92 and number 50 nationally. The number 2 player in Alabama, the number 12 power forward. He's listed as a center by some sites, but he is a power forward. He's a guy, too, that has some perimeter game as well, which makes him interesting. You know, you don't have a lot of 6'8", 6'9", centers. You may have some guys play the five, but they're not true centers. But, yeah, Givens a guy that can shoot a little bit. And he has a composite ranking of 97.98. That's very, very significant. 247 has him in the top 50, but rates him a little bit lower than some other sites do. Some other, I mean, ESPN absolutely loves him. And so this is a great get. One that I think, from talking to people, they didn't think they were going to get him. And then now you have. Of course, you got to hang on to him. You know, he's over there in Montgomery, Alabama, Jeff Davis High School. And so a lot of time between now and signing day. But this is a very, very, very significant development. I think it also shows, too, you know, Chris Jans can do more than just work the portal. That was one of the things that you loved about him when he got here is because he did such a great job. You know, such a great job at his previous stop, you know, out there with New Mexico State, you know, working the portal. And he's a guy with a junior college background, so he's kind of suited for that, especially in men's basketball. You know, you want to bring a nucleus back, but every year, you're having to work the portal. And I think having experience in a junior college ranks is a part of that, but it's because of the fact that it's a new roster every year, for the most part, in junior college. And some of the guys that carry over and develop, and that's really the case for Mississippi State this year. But very, very, very significant development here. And I love it. I think you guys do as well. But when you go back and you begin to think about, you know, basketball recruiting and things of that nature, maybe you're not really aware of what is coming this year at Mississippi State. Yeah. You're like me. I love Mississippi State men's basketball. I like to watch it. I don't cover it as much, but I love to see the Bulldogs win. And I really believe that Chris Jans has put us in a situation that, you know, we should expect some pretty big things this year. It's not just the fact that you got so many guys back. It's the fact that you're bringing in some other pieces to work and mesh around them. You know, we had that media opportunity here recently, had Josh Hubbard and Cam Matthews and Sean Jones. It was great to have a chance to kind of catch up with them, see what they're thinking about, what their feelings are about the newcomers. Of course, they're not going to get out there and talk poorly to those guys, but I think one of the things, and I believe it was Keyshawn Murphy that said, is that they all knew each other. You know, he said it wasn't a situation where you had, you know, a lot of guys kind of had to get to know each other. You had several guys out there that kind of understood, you know, what's expected. And so those guys are already on campus, you know. Riley Kugel, of course, had a great story on him with Justin Frommer recently. R.J. Melendez, Claudio Harris had a great story on him. Michael Nwoko and Kanye Clary. And so you look at this, you know, Clary was a guy, basically, when you brought him in, you knew that you were going to have a guard leave, right? We all knew it. Just part of the deal. But, you know, Clary's the guy that can always shoot it. And so, again, there's reason. You ever Googled yourself? You may be alarmed to know exactly how much of your private information and data is out there for anybody to access. Whether it be your phone number, your home address, or details about your family. It could be your kids' names, their ages. Whether you agree to this disclosure or not. And that's because data brokers are collecting and selling your information to marketers, scammers, and basically anyone willing to pay. It's the reason robocallers know your name, and while ads seem to follow you on every digital platform out there. Well, Aura fights back for you. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a data breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just data broker removal. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep all your logins safe, and they even give you spam call protection to cut off those stupid scammers. Aura also scans the dark web regularly for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, passwords, and they will notify you instantly if you are somehow exposed. If your identity is ever stolen, you're backed up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support to help you recover everything quickly. Other services charge about the same, but they only cover one or two areas. With Aura, you get it all. Data broker removal, credit and identity monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all with one simple app. Aura removes what is already exposed, protects what isn't, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That gives them plenty of time to go ahead and start protecting your data. They can remove your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are all safeguarded. That's Aura, AURA.com/remove. Certain terms and conditions apply. Be sure and check it out today at aura.com. Reason to be excited about this group. And again, the fact that, you know, Chris Jans is a guy that has had to do this every year, right? Is, you know, find the pieces that fit your system and then mold them into a team. And it's not just, again, about this year. You get a big, big, big decision for 2026. And, you know, you got one guy, I guess it's signed now, Dwalquan Warren, a couple of guys too, Joel Machat, Eric Payman, you know, be adding them as well too. But, yeah, it's a good time. I mean, it's a good time. Let's just say it for, you know, for what it is. Anytime that we have marquee players like Ladarius Given coming here, that's a big thing. That's worth getting excited about. Even if you're just a casual fan of Bulldog basketball. And there are a lot of people, too, that, like, you don't have a favorite sport per se. You just kind of cheer for Mississippi State. You know, that's just what you do, right? No matter what we're playing in, if you're going through there and you're on Twitter and you find out, hey, Bulldog softball is on, it's a big ball game. Bulldog soccer's on. And I love all of you to do that, right? It's just, hey, if State's playing, we're going to watch. But there have been some years in the past that, you know, basketball was just kind of something we did between football and baseball. And a lot of people like to hear it, but that's the reality of it. And that's the way we – how many times – and I've seen it so many times – people get so hard on our media for pointing out nobody's at a ball game. And, again, I get that it's difficult to get there for midweek games. But you didn't see those tweets last year, did you? It's because you guys were turning out. Now, granted, you know, the capacity of the hump and what it was, and a lot of people are like, hey, we've invested some money in basketball. I'm going to come up here and see what's all about it. And the hump looks a lot better. It does. It doesn't look as good as a new arena would have looked, but, you know, when we made the decisions, I believe we made the best decision we could under the circumstances. I mean, you know, if you tried the building thing lately, can you imagine building a new basketball arena? But all that I understood, you know, Mississippi State fans are back. You know, we're making the hump bump, as they say. You know, I think it's a good thing. And so I think now you begin to look forward to this and say, hey, I'm really excited about football, but men's basketball, and I think women's basketball too, I think you're going to be really excited about the product you see on the court this year. I know just being around those guys in the media opportunity we had here about 2 weeks ago, I mean, just kind of sitting there and being around them and the confidence that kind of exuded from those guys and how happy they appear to be back was enough to fire me up. It truly was. And I hope that's the case for each of you. You know, we'll have a full schedule release at some point, you know, not too in the distant future. And I want you to make plans to attend, come be a part of this. Not only is the hump a better place to watch a ball game, I think we're getting a better product on the floor. I don't think there's any question about that. I think there's probably more belief with the casual Mississippi State basketball fan than there has been in a long time. Yeah, of course, we had a really great year with Robert Woodard, Reggie Q, and those guys. We had a great run. Also had some pretty bad losses at times in a non-conference, but we had a really good year. And then we get beat, you know, by Liberty. And that kind of took the air out of the sails a little bit. I know a lot of our really basketball, fans that's their favorite sport. You want everybody to love it the way you do, right? And that's the case for all of us, right? We're like, oh, I wish we had more fan support for this and that. And then at times our basketball first fans kind of get at odds with everybody else. Because I don't understand why somebody would choose to go to a baseball game over basketball. You know, to each their own. But I think this is a scenario we have to kind of begin to measure some of that. When you begin to think about, hey, we played some very meaningful basketball games on the men's side, especially in Humphrey Coliseum last year. And so the team is certainly worthy of your support. You know, and here's the thing, too. I think it's important to understand for our basketball first fans. There were some games last year that were sold out, and I understand that they weren't capacity crowds because people opted to go to baseball. But there are a lot of fans that wanted to attend the game or could have attended the game that couldn't get tickets. And so if you're one of those season ticket holders and you're going to opt for baseball, let's make sure that we put that ticket out there where a Bulldog fan can get it. You know, we have a ticket for them over at jeanspage.com. So even if you can't be there, I can assure you there are other Bulldog fans that would love to come and sit inside the air-conditioned Humphrey Coliseum and cheer for the Bulldogs during an SEC game. And so be thinking of that as you kind of move forward. And yes, I understand they're your tickets. I get it. But we're in this thing together. And so when you can't make it, let's ensure that a Bulldog is in your seat on the men's and the women's side, really in every sport. You know my policy on that. You know my feelings. No matter where, you know, a lot of people say, well, I just don't want to mess with it, Steve. Well, you know, the people that bought tickets around you don't want to mess with, you know, rival fans sitting next to them either. You know, so it wouldn't hurt to make a little bit of an effort. You know, it's true. That's how I feel about it. But, yeah, I think it's one of those deals, too, that if you have not considered buying season tickets for men's basketball this year, and maybe you got a basketballer in your family, yeah, it'd be a great gift. Make some memories. Come be a part of that. Because, I think we got a chance to be really good this year. I think that's a fair assessment. And I think when you look at the level in which Chris Jans coaches defense, the way that Chris Jans makes things happen, it's like, hey, if you don't play defense, you're not going to play. And when you saw last year, how many times did you watch a ball game and then the national media or the SEC media, everybody begins to talk about how relentless Mississippi State is on the defensive end? That becomes a trademark. And I remember Brandon Walker pointing that out early in the year. People are like, well, you know, I don't know about this Mississippi State team. He's like, hey, we play defense. You can ask Tennessee. One of the most memorable nights in Humphrey Coliseum, recent memory. And of course, not Dalton Knecht, first round draft pick of the Los Angeles Lakers. That guy's great, man. And Mississippi State beat him. It's true. The guy's a phenomenal player. There's no question about it. If he stays healthy, he'll stay in the league a long time. Make a lot of money. The guy can really play. But he's also going to remember for the rest of his life the night he came to Starkville, Mississippi, and saw Cam Matthews kind of heaving it home on the final play of the game to cap off a victory over his Volunteers. So I get excited about it. I hope you guys can get excited about it too. I love it when we're good year-round, right? And that was the thing last year. We had such high expectations for football. We didn't expect to be, you know, maybe, you know, a Sugar Bowl team or anything like that, but we thought we'd be a solid bowl team. I remember telling the beginning of the year, I was like, hey, we go out there and play like we're capable of playing. We got a chance to win 9 or 10 games. We didn't get close. And that's what happens. It's like, okay, well, football's not as good as we hoped they would be. And so maybe basketball can carry us. And there were some times that basketball did. Now, it didn't end the way we wanted it to, but we were a good basketball team last year. And people forget, too, I mean, we didn't have Tolu for a long time. We get him back, you know, and even when he first came back, he wasn't quite 100%, but you know, he gave us what he had. And again, we lose to Izzo, you know, in Michigan State, there in the first round of the tournament. And you were hoping we'd at least win a game. I don't know if we'd beat North Carolina, but you were hoping at least get a game. We didn't. And on the women's side, of course, there were times that we were in a great position, playing exceptionally well. And then that kind of faded on us too. And so that season certainly didn't end the way we wanted it to. So you end football season without the egg and without a bowl game. You lose the first round of the NCAA tournament, and then ladies don't even make the women's tournament. And so then it kind of falls to baseball, right? And, of course, you know, softball was really good, you know, much better than we were the year before. And so last year, when you begin to look at the athletic calendar for the school year 2023-2024, arguably the best program we had was either men's basketball or baseball. But it's so much more fun when we don't get time off, right? Because you know how it is. I'm not going to call them fair weather fans because I know they still watch the game. But we got some fans like, I'm just not going to make the effort unless I think we're going to win. And so I get it. But the reality of that is that how much fun is it when week to week to week we have something to look forward to? And I think that's going to be the case this academic year. It'll begin, you know, here in a few weeks. You know, we're going to be in fall camp here in about 3 weeks. And again, we're playing football next month at home against Eastern Kentucky. Next month. That's fun to say. And again, get all your honeydew stuff now. Now, do I expect us to be, you know, a great football team this year? I think we're going to be fun to watch. And I talked to somebody else in the SEC media today. And they're like, well, how do you think State's going to be? I said, I don't know, maybe 6-6, 7-5. What? You think State's going to win 6? And I said, well, yeah. Yeah, I do. Why do you not? Have you looked at our schedule? And they're like, well, I just don't know. I'm like, well, let's kind of break it down here. Do you think State's capable of winning at Arizona State? I know it's a road game, but have you seen how bad they were last year? So State's got a real chance to win those 4 non-conference games as I pull up the schedule, right? So Eastern Kentucky, that's a dub. Arizona State was not good last year, and yes, it's a tough situation when you have to go all the way over there and then come back and then play again the next Saturday. At least it's a night game, right? But yeah, you beat Arizona State, and then you get Toledo, and so that's 3-0 right there. That's 3 dubs. And then you begin to look a little deeper in this thing. You got UMass. Okay, so you should win 4. Arizona State being the more difficult of the 4, but you should be able to get all 4. You know, let's say worst case you get 3-1. That's why I say 6-6, 7-5. And then Florida comes in here, a team that likely has some doubt about their coach. The 2 Napier years have not been good. And you begin to think here, if State's 3-0 when Florida shows up, the crowd that'll be there, even though it's an early morning game, it'll be packed. And that's a game, it's a toss-up game, right? And you get that toss-up game at home. So is that a win? Possibly. Going to Texas is going to be tough. Going to Georgia is going to be tough. A&M coming in here, I don't know what to expect on A&M. I don't think anybody else does either. But I'm glad we get that game at home. And that's the thing I think about, too. If you're trying to motivate your team, just put on that tape from last year. I would, if I'm Jeff Flabby, I would play that video on a loop 24 hours a day in the SEAL complex, even though he wasn't a part of it. I would remind them how terrible that was. And, of course, that was the last game of the Zach Arnett era at Mississippi State. It was one of the most embarrassing losses that we have had in my lifetime. And I understand that we've taken it on a chin sometimes at home, but we lost to a very mediocre Texas A&M team that had a third-team quarterback playing. It's just inexcusable. Well, the next week you've got Arkansas coming in here. And so that's a team that's likely going to be having a coaching change at the end of the year. And by the time they get here, who knows what kind of shape they're in. And so when I look at those games, I consider all those games toss-ups. And you never know what the Egg Bowl is going to look like. You just never know. Ever. We go to Oxford. You know, they'll be playing for a lot. We may be playing for a spoiler. You know, Missouri comes in here. Missouri was really good last year. You got to go Tennessee. And so there's not a lot of margin for error here. But again, you win your 4 non-conference games and you find a way to get these toss-ups, get a couple of them, you're a bowl team, probably a Tennessee bowl team. You know, maybe we had the Texas Bowl. Maybe we had the Liberty. I think it'd be a really solid year for Levy the first year, but I also don't rule out the possibility of an upset. If you can stay healthy and you can play offense in this league, you got a chance to win. Now, we're going to have to get some defensive play for sure, but I think there are some teams that may be somewhat offensively challenged. They're going to really be up against it, against Mississippi State, Jeff Levy, and Matt Holchak, this offense. I don't have any doubt that we're going to be able to score. You know, the determination and probably the deciding factor in our season is going to be our ability to stop other people. And sometimes the best way to do that is to just make it a track meet and make people uncomfortable. When you begin to get separation in ball games, people have to change your game plan to keep up. And when you've got some of these run-first teams and you're able to get separation in the first half, it's very difficult to catch up just kind of running your bread and butter. Now, all of a sudden, you got to drop back and pass a little bit more. And the way that I've always looked at that is the more times they throw it, the better chance we have to catch one of them. And so we just need to be opportunistic at times on defense. But yeah, am I expecting a big year? No. But I think it could be a really fun year. I remember year one under Mullen. We finished 5-7. Maybe you've forgotten that. We did. Didn't make a bowl game. Should have. You know, we missed challenging a pass from Tyson Lee to Leon Berry that would have had a first and goal situation. They ruled us beyond a line of scrimmage. It was not close. We didn't review it. We didn't challenge it. And it basically cost us. And, of course, we had a fumble late, you know, on a zone read play. We fumbled it. Should have won that game. You make a tackle against LSU or you make a pitch to Anthony Dixon, you beat LSU in that game. And so I think it'll be a similar year that we'll probably be 6-6 or so, but probably scare some people to death. I think there is an enthusiasm mainly about this offense. And you got guys like Kelly Akare that have come in. They're not subscribing to any of this, hey, it's a rebuilding year. Hey, it's a money year for them. They got to get out there and go make some things happen. And I think Chad Bumpus and Jeff Lebby and the rest of the staff have done a good job kind of outfitting this offense with some pieces that can compete in the Southeastern Conference. And so I expect we'll get off to a good start in football, and I think because of the fact that we probably have some measured expectations this year, hey, let's just get to a bowl game. And if we get lucky, if we get to a bowl game and then get the egg back, it's a great year, right? And I don't mean a great year by annual standards. I'm just saying basically first year under Jeff Lebby, if you're able to get the egg back and get to a bowl game, I think you've done right well. And then when you think about what we're adding on the basketball side, on the men's and women's side, and then you look at your baseball portal recruiting efforts, could be a really good year for us. Could be a really good year to be a Bulldog fan. Could be a lot to cheer for. And I hope that's the case, and I hope that you agree. And we certainly want you to be here in Starkville every chance you get. And so our athletic teams really need to give you an excuse to come, right? It's like, hey, I like to be up here around everybody, especially when things are going well. There's nothing like – you don't want to be around that self-loathing fan that kind of hate watches the team, like they drag themselves up there and sit out there in the tailgate, oh, we're going to get killed today. You know, we'll just stay home. You know, let somebody else have your tickets. But be that as it may, really, really excited about what to get into football camp and to learn more about this team. And I'm told yesterday there will be some periods that will be open. We'll have a chance to get in there and kind of look at some things, more so in the fall than we had in the spring. Only had two viewing periods in the spring and, of course, the spring game. So hopefully we'll be able to share some things with you. But it's not going to be like it was under Leach. You know, Leach was wide open until the last week of camp. And unbeknownst to many of you, not a lot of people came to practice. They showed up for interview sessions. They didn't always come to practice. And so you wouldn't know that by how some of the reporting that was done, but that's the reality of it. But I don't think that's going to be an option this year. I don't think it's going to be open. And listen, I get it too for Lebby. If you're Jeff Lebby, you got a brand new staff, you got a brand new team, you're implementing a new offense, and you know, probably some things that, you know, it's not a well-oiled machine just yet. And maybe next year he opens it up a little bit more, so we'll see. But again, I'm excited for it. And again, I think we're about 3 weeks away from camp opening up. And then we'll be playing football next month. All right, let's do today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Guys, Blair is a mortgage professional. Blair is a guy that gets things done. If you're looking for a game day condo, which may be more affordable than you think, Blair's got a unique way of kind of putting things together to make things a little easier on the pocketbook when he can. Maybe you're looking to buy a house for the first time. Maybe you're going through a life reset. Maybe it's a job transfer. Maybe it's a relationship change. Maybe it's a divorce. I don't know. Maybe you're getting married. Maybe it's the first time that you said, you know what, let's plant some roots somewhere. Let me take a lot of the stress out of that and refer you to Blair Chandler. 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. Maybe you're looking to refinance. I don't know. Maybe you're looking to buy a house. But the bottom line is, no matter what you're doing and when you're doing it, you need to do it with Blair Chandler. Save yourself a lot of pain and aggravation. And listen, I worked in the mortgage business for a while, too, and I can tell you it's a very complicated process. But nobody knows the underwriting guidelines quite like Blair Chandler. He knows what underwriters are looking for. He knows how to structure your loan to to give you the best chance of an approval. And again, always get pre-qualified. Before you even go begin shopping for a house, get pre-qualified. Nobody tells you that, you know, when you're young and enterprising and trying to figure this thing out and you don't even really know how to do adult things yet. You just think you do. Get pre-qualified. Don't waste you or your real estate agent's time going to look at properties that are above your means. But get pre-qualified. Get that starter house and kind of get going. And Blair can help you with every bit of that. That's Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. Okay, at long last, Jay Heath Hopkins asked for this. And I can tell you this list sucks. It does. It's the top 10 worst cover songs. And some of you guys are not going to like some of my selections. And that is okay because you can get glad in the same pair of pants you get mad in. But here we go. Top 10 worst cover songs. Now, I could have done a more expansive list, but some of this, I know these songs were recorded kind of tongue-in-cheek, but some of them weren't. Some of them, people were very serious in their attempt, and they came up well short of the mark. And I hate to skew negative, but once I said on this show that we were going to do top 10 worst covers, I had about 25 submissions from you guys. Hit me up, Steve, don't forget this, don't forget that. I didn't use most of those because some of them I didn't agree with. And I think these are probably worse than many of the songs that you mentioned. And maybe you haven't heard them. And I think, let me encourage, when you listen to our Spotify list, maybe just listen to a few bars and skip to the next one. Because I don't think anybody, with rare exception, there's a couple songs on here. There's some bands that you guys have been brainwashed into liking that you're going to think, oh, Steve, it's great. You're crazy. And maybe I am crazy. Maybe I am crazy. But I don't listen to bad music if I can help it. So here we go. Let's go ahead and make somebody mad right out of the gate. Number 10, it's Green Day's version of Like a Rolling Stone, the Bob Dylan classic. You say, but Steve, I like it better. Okay, fine. You can like it better. It's terrible. It is. It was a bad song selection from Green Day. And listen, I know that they went out and kind of did this masquerade punk thing and covered some Fang songs and some Ramon songs and trying to get some credibility. As I've said many times before, Green Day is not a punk band. They would like to be, but everybody that puts a Sid Vicious chain around their neck and grabs a guitar and hangs it low is not a punk rocker. It's not. I don't get it, and I understand if you love them, that's fine, and you enjoy your soy latte from Green Day, from Starbucks, that is completely your business. But this is a terrible song. Number 9, speaking of terrible, it's Kelly Osbourne's version of Madonna's Papa Don't Preach. It's not good. It's not good. And I know Kelly has tried to be a musician. Ozzy has tried to prop her up a little bit. And, you know, Kelly Osbourne, it's like everybody in that family wants to be a star. And they're kind of trading on Ozzy's name, and I get it. But Kelly, just it's not working. And I'm not saying she's not a good person. I mean, I love the Osbournes, you know, when they had the show. It was great. I watched every episode. I watched, you know, Jack and Ozzy's road adventures and all that kind of stuff, too. It was great. But, you know, when Madonna put this song out, it was very controversial. Like, now kids today would hear that and say, why in the world was it controversial? Well, she got pregnant out of wedlock, and she was keeping the baby, defying her dad and keeping her baby, right? But Kelly picked it, and I think it was probably low-hanging fruit. It's like, hey, the vocal delivery on this is sketchy, to say the least. You know, Madonna, no matter what you think about her, especially in her 80s days, her vocal delivery was really good. And I know some of that was the magic of a studio, but she has some talent. But this cover, this rendition of that classic song missed the mark. Number 8. And to be honest with you, there is a redeeming quality in this version of this song because you can actually understand the lyrics. And some of you aren't going to like this because you think I'm making fun of them, and I'm not. I actually think this is a song that is timeless in many respects, but what many of you can't seem to comprehend or are unwilling to accept is that Nirvana's Nevermind album was basically a corporate creation. You don't want to hear it. That's cool. You can like it, but let's not sit here and have a revisionist history about this. The bottom line is this. is the 80s rock scene had gotten incredibly bloated and cookie cutter, and something needed to change. Something needed to change. And the executives at MTV says, you know what, we're going to go in a different direction here. So it's Paul Anka version of Smells Like Teen Spirit. That's your cover. Number eight, Paul Anka's Smells Like Teen Spirit. And again, I think this is all kind of being silly, but you can listen and check it out. Now, number seven is I did my research for worst covers. This cover, I did not know about this one. And I listened to it, and it is absolutely terrible. It is terrible. Didn't know about it until today. And every list that I looked at, it said the worst covers. This was on there. And maybe everybody's just parroting each other's material. You know, I added some songs of my own. But it's William Shatner's Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds covering the Beatles classic. The harmonies on that of the background accompanying it, pretty good. Shatner was probably high when he recorded this. It's terrible. I can't believe the Beatles actually licensed this thing for release. That's how bad it is. It is so incredibly terrible. Captain Kirk absolutely let us down. Absolutely let us down. And he's done some other stuff too, some big band stuff. Not nearly as bad as this, but this sucks so bad. Speaking of sucking, it's this rendition of an Aerosmith classic. This is another one that just makes no sense to me. Number one, it's the wrong band covering the wrong song, and it's their whole approach to this was wrong. And I know some of you see this band as a tremendous, tremendous influence on alternative rock, and I will give you that. They weren't really my cup of tea, but I have been to the steeple and paid my respect to REM when I was in Athens. Because while I don't really like most of their music, I respect the fact that they're incredibly talented, and even though it's not really a genre that moved the needle with me, I respect Michael Stipe and the creations that they've had over the years. Like the song, this one goes out to the one I love. It's a great track. It is. When they got real popular on MTV, I felt like it was kind of being force-fed, you know. But they cover Toys in the Attic, and there's just some songs you don't mess with, and this is one of them in my estimation. And I think, again, REM covering an Aerosmith song is just not good. Speaking of songs that shouldn't be covered by pop artists and people from cross genres, it's number five on your list. It's Britney Spears covering I Love Rock and Roll. Listen, I think Britney Spears was very talented. She was carefully packaged, beautiful young lady at the time. Things are a little bit different for her now. But I think this is one of those things where she was rolling so incredibly fast that people are like, she can do no wrong. Let's cover I Love Rock and Roll. And it just didn't work. It just didn't work. Again, Britney Spears, like the Toxic song, it's great. Stronger is great. Again, very talented and also very well packaged by the record company. She had a lot of people around her that said, hey, this is how we're going to do this. And it happens all the time. Like there's always a new teen superstar, and it was her. The pride of Kentwood, Louisiana. And yes, I know she went to Park Lane. Number four, another person that kind of trading on their the stardom of their famous parent. And I don't remember the name of the show, but Paris Hilton was on a show with Nicole Richie. And if I'm picking between the two, I'm going Nicole Richie. But Paris Hilton was basically, you know, I guess she still is, she's just kind of this social debutante because of the fact that she has money. She's beautiful, don't get me wrong. But she's not a singer. But she elected to cover Rod Stewart's classic, Do You Think I'm Sexy? Guys, this is absolutely, absolutely terrible. And I could say something else, but I'm trying to keep it a PG-13 show. It's terrible. And somebody somewhere around her should have said, hey, this is probably not a good idea. And the whole part of it was of course, kind of trading on the fact that she's a beautiful woman, and the fact that the lyrics are so provocative. But somebody somewhere should have said, you know what, this isn't good. All right, number three, a band I'd never heard of, and again, where somebody needed a friend. Somebody needed a friend to pull them aside and say, guys, we're not doing this. Guys, we're not doing it. And it's so bad, I was hesitant to put it on the list because I didn't want to be disrespectful to NWA. It's that bad, right? And I love NWA. It's a band called Dynamite Hack that made some folksy alternative rock, Boys in the Hood thing, and it's almost disrespectful. I mean, on honest to goodness, it's like it's also tongue-in-cheek that it loses its meaning. And it's like, hey, look how cute and funny we can be. That's how it is. But it's absolutely awful. Awful. Number two, you may not know this, or perhaps you do. You remember Pat Boone, of course, was a huge, huge hit for a long time. For those of us that were kids of the 70s, you remember Pat Boone kind of being forced down our throats. Pat Boone, several years ago, did an album called No More Mr. Nice Guy, where he covered a bunch of rock songs. And again, it was kind of tongue-in-cheek. And I don't think that's, like, I think it's humorous, but not for the reasons they think it is. That's my this big band thing, I get it. But they covered Crazy Train, and you may recall, on the Osbournes, that was kind of the theme, right? That was the music. You know, crazy, that's how it goes. You know, you know it. That's number two. And there's, again, I'm sure Ozzy and those guys had a big laugh about it. I think it's disrespectful. Number one, I know this is going to make some of you mad, and I'm here for the fight, okay? I'm here for it. And part of it is not so much the cover itself. It's basically the ignorance of people that liked the song. I remember when all this happened. And because, you know, you may not know this, but years ago, your good friend and host was a program director at a radio station. It's true. And so my knowledge of music probably exceeds most. And so when this thing came out, I was like, what? And like everybody's like, oh, have you heard Nirvana's new song? I'm like, what's the name of it? Well, it's The Man Who Sold the World. Well, it's not Nirvana's song. And they weren't even the first band to cover it. It's David Bowie's song. The song was out before I was even born. And it's just one of those things that just irritates me to no end. It's like, oh, well, Steve, they went and made it their own. Do not sit here and attribute that to Nirvana based on your own ignorance of music. Okay, we're not going to do that. Oh, they went and made it their own. No, they didn't. They didn't go make it their own. They didn't. It's just, hey, think about this for a second. Okay, and this is kind of makes the point for me. Outside of Smells Like Teen Spirit, there's so many people who will tell you, my favorite Nirvana song is The Man Who Sold the World. Think about this for a second. Your second favorite or first favorite Nirvana song is a song they didn't even write. They didn't even record it first. Let that sink in for a second. You good? Okay, we're going to proceed. But that's number one for me. And again, it's the fact that there's just such fanfare about this without knowing the history of the track. That'd be like me, Steve Robertson. I'm going to put my band together, and we're going to go out, and we're going to do, you know, some old Elvis songs, and we'll make them our own, right? And then some other people are going to be like, well, but Steve, it's a great cover, but that's not your song. No, it's mine. If Man Who Sold the World is Nirvana, then me covering Everything Zen from Bush is mine. And then maybe that's your favorite Steve Robertson song. You never know. But it just irritates me. Again, and I saw this thing the other day about this lawsuit about the Nirvana t-shirt thing, you know, with the X out of the eyes and everything. And it's like there's some clowns out there attributing the creation of that t-shirt to Kurt Cobain. It's not true. And the lawsuit shows that, you know, there's somebody else that's been trading on Nirvana's name that shouldn't be, right? They're entitled to some compensation. But the guy who actually designed the shirt is also joined the lawsuit. And it's just so funny, too. Like, I've read Miss Maya Angelou quotes attributed to Kurt Cobain. I've read all this other stuff. Abraham Lincoln, you know, 47 years ago, slash Kurt Cobain. You know, a lot of the things that irritate me about Nirvana are not things that Kurt Cobain did. It's what the fans have done that are falsely attributed to Nirvana. And I have so many people that say, Steve, why are you hating on Nirvana? I'm not hating on Nirvana. I don't like Nirvana. I never liked Nirvana. But some of you have this revisionist history about what Nirvana was really like, and the fact that the star was already fading quite significantly when In Utero came out. And if you do your research about In Utero, you'll find out they had to use 3 or 4 different producers because Cobain had become so incredibly combative in recording sessions because he didn't want to do Nevermind 2. He didn't want to do Nevermind 1. But he did what he was supposed to do to pay the rent. And then he's like, hey, now that we're established, I want to go back to my own vision. And many of the record executives and the fans refused to let that happen. But there was so much discussion back then, and you can find it online. There are people that try to defend it. There was discussions about shelving In Utero because it was so over budget. Because it took forever to produce this record because they couldn't get a producer. And even the producer of the record himself, you can find those reels out there too if you look hard enough, and said, you know, that we're going to do what we want to do, right? And that everybody with the record company said this record is going to tank. And it didn't do nearly what Nevermind did. Of course, a lot of people, of course, kind of bought that record, you know, posthumously. And again, God rest Kurt Cobain's soul. He didn't ask to be part of the machine. But there's so many people out here that like, oh, he was an anti-establishment person. He wasn't want to be famous. Yeah, there's an interview out there. You can go look on YouTube. Chris Novoselic will tell you that a lot of that stuff was an act. Yes, he absolutely wanted to be famous. So this whole anti-hero stuff, we can stop it. I'm going to stop right now because I could do a whole show about this alone. But nevertheless, God rest the soul of Kurt Cobain and all the people that that wrote these songs that other people have kind of embarrassed. That's my viewpoint. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let me know. I hope that you dislike this list as much as I do, though I doubt some of you will. But reach out, let us know your suggestions. And again, thanks to Heath for the suggestion. I may have to do a palate cleanser on Monday and come back with another, maybe a clever cover song, maybe songs you didn't know were covers. I got to do something because I've got this bitter taste in my mouth about this. But nevertheless, thanks so much for your support of the top 10 list. You can find me on all forms of social media at ScoutSteveR and, of course, Roy Simonti, the keeper of the list, on Twitter or X at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. And you can find our great list over on Spotify under that same handle. Be sure and subscribe there. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, I love Campus Bookmart. I love going in there. You know, but you better go in there with some money to spend, right? Because of the fact that you're going to find so many things you like. A great group of folks doing a great job for a great fan base. And you should look no further when you need Mississippi State merchandise. Don't run to Amazon or eBay or any of that stuff, man. Support a Starkville business, an institution like Campus Bookmart. You can visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays, BSR. That stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. Absolutely incomplete. But when you're in town, be sure and go by and peruse their fine selections in person. See their smiling faces. There's so many things that maybe you don't know you need until you get there and you see them. Right? There's that perfect thing for that one little place in your house where you need to rep the brand. You can find a decorative item to let the world know that you're a Bulldog. Look into that. All right, let's talk a little bit about the draft. When we get back together, and that reminds me, you know, what to see how Monday's show goes. May go early Monday, probably go early Monday, and then go Wednesday afternoon, because we'll recap the first day of the draft, and then we'll come back on Wednesday afternoon or evening and recap the entirety of the draft. So I wrote an article earlier. I'm going to give you a little tease about some of that stuff. I spent the morning. It's one of the reasons I'm later getting the show up today. work the phones, just trying to get a sense of what the draft value is for some guys. I got some friends that are in the scouting business and said, hey, you tell me, if it was your decision, I know that it's not, you know, but just tell me how you feel and kind of what are the shortcomings of some of these guys and why maybe they won't command the signing bonus that maybe some people expect. And so I spend a lot of time talking to people that know the pro baseball draft much better than I do. You know, we always keep up with it. We follow it. There are some things that are important to understand. And I go back to the days of Jake Mangum. Now, Jake is our guy. We love Jake. And Jake has proven a lot of people wrong. It's true. And so, you know, I don't know if you guys... I'm going to pull this up, okay? Just because I want to make sure we illustrate the point correctly here. There's so much of this that I don't know that people fully appreciate, right? There's a lot of people out there that, you know, here's what they'll say. You know, Jake came back for his senior year, and he improved his draft stock, and he did. However, he wasn't able to line his pocketbook with a ton of money. It seems like I remember maybe 25 grand, something around that. I mean, it was not life-changing money. It's because Jake is what was called a senior saver, right? Jake wanted the record, right? And Jake's a guy that believes in himself, and he's like, hey, I want that SEC hits record. And then maybe we can get a chance to win an AFL championship. And sadly, we came up just short of doing that. But Jake didn't really gain a whole lot when it came to that aspect of it. Now, you could argue, too, that there are a lot of people out there that never expected Jake to profile as a big leaguer. And the truth of the matter is if he didn't get if he didn't have that back injury last year, I think he probably comes up late. So let me see if we can get this here, okay? There's just so much of this, right? And it's incredible to think, too, that it feels like Jake was just here yesterday. And it's not true. Yeah, it's crazy to think about that aspect of it. I mean, you know, he goes to low A ball in 19 and played 53 games. Yeah, I mean, it's nuts. I mean, that whole year, Jake... What, he played 120 games that year, counting what he did at Mississippi State? Then he went and played low A ball with the Mets? Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But, you know, looking back here, so Jake, in the 17 draft, Jake was drafted in the 30th round because he was draft eligible as a sophomore. Comes back, gets drafted in the 32nd round in the 18 draft. And then in the 19 draft, he gets drafted in the 4th round. So people are like, man, that's significant. And to kind of the uneducated eye, that's very dramatic. But the sooner that a team can draft a senior, the more money they save. Because the senior has no leverage, right? They got to just basically take what they'll give you. And that was really the case. And again, Jake got probably more than most guys in his circumstance would have. And so guys like Connor Hyzak, Tyler Davis, Tyson Harden, those guys fall into that same category. So you may see them drafted in the top 10 rounds, but it doesn't mean they're going to get top 10 money. They're going to get well beneath slot, well beneath slot. It's rare that anybody gets anything close to slot as a senior. So Steve, what is slot? Well, each pick in the draft is assigned a slot value. And so it's basically one of those situations where there is some guidelines for contract negotiations, part of the collective bargaining agreement. And so let's say, for an example, that, you know, the fourth round spot is, you know, $500,000. And they say, you know, hey, we can pay this guy $25,000 and he's going to sign, and then we can save that $375,000 and pay somebody else over slot. That's how that works. And even that seems confusing for some. But I want to make sure you understand that. If you see Connor Hyzak drafted in the fifth or sixth or seventh round, he's not going to get a ton of money as a signing bonus. That's important to understand. Now, it looks good, right? The more guys we have drafted, and I think we're going to have a ton of guys drafted this year. I say a ton. We're going to have several guys drafted this year. And I think that's it's good for the program, right? It's one of those things you look at and say, anytime that you get your name in the paper, it's like, hey, I went to Mississippi State. I improved my my draft stock. And Connor Hyzak's one of those guys. And so I'm pulling up our Mississippi State baseball draft history. If you hear me clicking over here, there's not a bomb being put together. So let's take a quick look. Like last year, we just had three guys drafted. And you say, well, Steve, it kind of stands to reason. Colton Ledbetter, Cade Smith, Kellum Clark all got drafted. Of course, Kellum in the 20th round. Ledbetter went in the second, Cade Smith in the sixth, and Kellum Clark in the 20th. And Kellum playing ball right now. Aaron Nixon, of course, was an undrafted free agent. Wouldn't have been nice to have him this year. He could have been an undrafted free agent this year too, but I understand he got a pretty lucrative deal by undrafted free agent standards. But you go back and look at 2022. Landon Sims, drafted. Logan Tanner, drafted. Brad Cumbus, drafted. Casey Hunt, drafted but elected to come back and then signed to UFA last year. Jackson Fristo, drafted. Cameron James, drafted. Andrew Walling, UDFA. RJ Yeager, UDFA. I share that with you because of the fact I think there is a chance. I'm not ready to put money on it yet. I think there is a chance that we may match or exceed the number of draftees from 2022. Now, 2021, you look back, obviously Bednar goes in the first, Tanner Allen in the fourth, Sarantola in the fifth, Christian McLeod in the fifth, Rowdy Jordan in the 11th, and then Houston Harding, of course, signed the undrafted free agent deal. And so I mentioned Eric Sarantola kind of as a point of reference here, and in some respects, Christian McLeod too. You begin to think about that starting rotation at the beginning of the year, right? C-Mac, Bednar, Sarantola, all three of them get drafted in the top five rounds of the draft. That's going to happen this year, barring something totally unforeseen. Gerangelo expected to go in the first, and then Cal Steven, third or fourth, even though he's had a little bit of traction and traffic from teams, maybe late in the second. And then Nate's probably a guy that goes 4-6. So I suspect all three, your whole weekend rotation is going to get drafted. And then you think about guys like Colby Holcomb. You remember Sarantola did not pitch as a starter the rest of the year, at least on the weekend, after the weekend at LSU. We had the big lead on Sunday. We blew it, let him get back in the game, cost us a sweep. And so I think about Colby Holcomb. Colby Holcomb has the pro body. Colby Holcomb has the pro arm. And there may be some people out there that were interested in him when he was coming out of junior college that may say, you know what? Hey, I think that guy's better than he's shown at Mississippi State. And you saw it with Andrew Walling, right? You saw it with Brandon Woodruff. There's some guys that get here, and for some reason or another, it doesn't work out. They get into the minors. They don't have the distraction of school. They can focus solely on baseball, and then their career kind of takes off. Walling came here because he wanted to prove he could be a starter. There were some people that wanted to draft him as a reliever, and came here and just couldn't get it figured out. I mean, just absolutely couldn't get it figured out. It's one of those crazy things. It's like he had the yips the whole time he was here. Nothing ever worked out. If you look at him now in the minors, he's killing it. I think Holcomb could be the same type of guy. Now, they've got to find a way when it's time to throw that rise fastball that he gets up, because sometimes Colby, a lot of it's, the fact that he's so big and long, sometimes the ball tarries a little bit closer to the plate than it should. You don't always get the swing and miss element. But Colby could be that next guy. And you look at it and say, man, why couldn't he have done this at State? He's shown some flashes. But I think there's a really good chance that you see him drafted. And maybe not in the top 10 rounds. I guess it could happen. But, Colby, I don't think, has a ton of leverage. But, this is a guy, too. He went into portal. But I think there is the possibility, if he didn't get what he wanted in the draft, that he would pull out of the portal. And some of you are like, you know what? I'm okay with him leaving. And I get that aspect of it. But I want the best for all these young men. I really do. Of course, my primary interest is Mississippi State. But the better that these young men do, they come to Mississippi State, they win some games, they sign pro contracts, they make some money, it adds more prestige to the program. It does. Now, you can always look back and say, well, we should have done more with those guys. And I think we're going to look back at the Dakota Jordan, Hunter Hines era and realize that we probably should have done more. And, of course, some of that's got to do with the pitching struggles we had in 23. But I think you're going to see a pretty busy couple days. Now, Sunday is going to be rounds 1 and 2. Now, what's interesting about that is in round 1, you've got the comp picks, right? You got the competitive balance picks. You've got the compensatory picks to kind of make up a difference in trades and things like that. And so you're going to have your normal 30 picks. Everybody gets one first-round pick. And then prospect promotion incentive picks, there are going to be two of those. Arizona gets 31. Baltimore gets 32. Compensation picks, Minnesota gets 33. Compensation for Sonny Gray, the deal that they did. And then the competitive balance round A, which is technically still part of the first round, the Brewers at 34, Arizona at 35, Cleveland at 36, Pittsburgh at 37, Colorado at 38, and the Royals at 39. So 39 picks in the first round. There's a good chance that two Bulldogs are selected there. Good chance. You feel really good about Gerangelo. There's some people that suggest he may go in the teens. And then Dakota, really the back half of the first round, he could leak into the second. You know, there are some people that are worried about the strikeout ratio. There are other people that think, you know what, hey, we can fix that. You know, and all it takes is one team. So it's a good chance you're going to see both of those guys drafted on day one. And again, Dakota back end of the first, maybe the front part of the second. I don't think he'd get out of day one without both of those guys being drafted. Now, on the Mississippi State side of things, you always want what's best for these people, but you also want what's best for Mississippi State. And I hate to say we're rooting against this, but if you get through day one without Dante Norrie being drafted, there's a really good chance that he's going to be a Mississippi State Bulldog. Now, he's been here, right? Came here on July 5th, showed up, and maybe that's a leverage tactic. Maybe that's, you know, to show scouts, hey, you're really going to have to pay me. I'm not just going to sit at home. I'm going to do everything I can to improve my bargaining power. But if you get through day one, you feel really good because the money that he's asking for, I'm told, is very significant. Basically, first round, upper second round type money. And so if he gets beyond the second round, you got to feel pretty good about that. And, again, everybody drafted in the first 10 rounds signs. It's just kind of how things are. They're not going to pick you if you're not going to sign. It's a little different in day three, right? There'll be some guys, too, that get drafted in day three that do sign, especially some older guys around the league. They say, you know what, I'm just ready to begin my pro career. There are going to be some guys that are portal commitments to other schools. They're going to get drafted and sign. And so there's a lot of people right now, you look at it and say, man, the portal looks pretty good. The SEC's really upgraded their talent level. But some of the – we've had it happen to us. You know, Bill Lee a couple years ago out of Mercer, we thought he was going to be here, and he gets drafted late and signs, just ready to begin his pro career. So that aspect of it is important to understand too. Now, one of the things I want to share with you, and maybe I've done this before, but you can't skip a pick. Let's like say, for an example, the Texas Rangers, world champions, right? Let's say they get to the 18th, 19th round, and they're out of bonus money. Or expect to be out of bonus money. Well, they're just going to pick a kid that they know is not coming to school. So you may see Dante Norrie or Conrad Kaysen get drafted 18th, 19th round. You're like, oh my gosh, now we have to sweat this thing out. Well, really you don't. Because what's happened is a franchise has selected a player that they know is not going to sign. Just to take a pick. Because you don't just say, we just skip our pick. You have to make a pick. And if you don't have any bonus money left over, well, you pick a guy that it's basically a skip, if that makes sense to you. You just skip it. And so you can't technically skip it, but you sign a guy that's never going to sign, and you have no intentions of signing. Of course, you'd love to sign him for a minimum value, but a lot of times guys, kind of like a draft and follow thing, we'll draft him, and then if somebody else doesn't sign and we have some money left over, maybe we make a late swing at him. But when you have guys like Dante Norrie that want, you know, life-changing money, there's just not going to be enough left over, you know, 18th, 19th round. And so it's important to kind of understand that. And so once we get through the draft, I'll have a better idea of who we expect to sign and who we expect to stay in school. Of course, the signees we're most worried about, Dante Norrie, obviously. He's a top 50 guy. Conrad Kaysen, right outside the top 100. You know, that's a guy, too, that kind of had kind of a shaky end of the season, but had a really good combine. And so he was kind of fading a little bit. Now some teams are kind of back on him. That's important to understand, too. You know, and again, you know, the Norrie situation is interesting, again, because his dad is an NBA coach. And so he's not a guy that you look at and say, well, we can just throw him, you know, $1.5 million and he'll sign. There's no guarantee of that. And the draft models are not really favorable to players of his age. He is the oldest high school player in the draft. He is also the fastest player in the draft, period. High school, college, JUCO combined. He is the fastest player. So there's some interesting dynamics with him. And some would say, yeah, but he should come to school. He's only going to get older. Yes, but then he'll be on time. You got a guy that's basically 20 years of age that's been hitting off 15, 16-year-old kids. And so you wonder how real it is. Now, you look at the makeup, and he's like, yeah, the kid's really good. But he's also been playing against kids that aren't nearly as talented as him, not even close. And so all of a sudden he comes to the SEC, has a couple of years, and then replicates that level of success. Well, now all of a sudden the guy's a potential first-rounder. Now that money that you wanted will be available to you, all because you invested in yourself and spent 2 years on the college level. And so that's rather significant, and I share that with you just because, you know, it's what you need to know. That's the name you look for, Dante Norrie. And again, if you want him to come to school, you want him to be undrafted on Sunday. You want to go to bed Sunday night with him being undrafted. Now, still crazy things could happen early on Monday, but based on the money that I'm told that he's asking for, it's going to be difficult for him to get that if he gets out of second round. And so then he likely ends up being undrafted or drafted extremely late, right? There's some other guys out there like Kevin Mantle. You know, this is a guy, too, that can make you a better ball club next year. Former Kansas State pitcher, went to junior college, absolutely dominated. You get him in, you know, and that's a guy that nobody's talking about, right? Because everybody's caught up in the portal, right? We're all talking about portal transfers, and we're going to talk about some portal stuff before I get out of here. But everybody's like, hey, we got to get these guys in the portal. Kevin Mantle is a guy that went to the MLB Combine as a JUCO player, one of only a handful of JUCO guys that got invited, and he went up there and had a pretty good combine. Is he going to get drafted, or is he willing to sign for next to nothing to begin his pro career? You certainly hope not. You know that, but there's a lot of irons in the fire right now for your coaches. You think about Dave Mershon, right? There's a lot of people that tell me Mershon is likely not expected to get the money that he wants. That doesn't mean that he won't sign. Like if he wants $600,000 and somebody's willing to give him $350,000, he may take it. We just simply don't know. But you want to talk about a best-case scenario for Mississippi State. Certainly, you want all your signees to come to class. But if you get Dante Norrie and Dave Mershon on this 2025 roster, you're going to have one of the more athletic lineups in the country. And Norrie is a guy, too. Like we talked about Enrique Bradfield a little bit. You know, a guy like that, basically anything hitting the gap is playable when you've got that kind of foot speed and his ability to track a baseball. It's very significant. But we talk about being back. How far back we are will be determined in many respects by what happens here in the next week. If you can navigate this draft and get Dave Mershon back, you're thrilled. If you can find a way to get Dante Norrie to school, you're thrilled. You don't want to get too greedy, but we need to be. If we want to get to Omaha, we need to be as greedy as possible. And everybody involved is doing what they're supposed to do. But you're basically trying to get Dave Mershon to come back because Dave's a draft-eligible sophomore. He can go through this process next year and got another year to prove himself and probably rise and still have a year of leverage left to work with. That's important, right? It's not a Jake situation where he would come back as a senior and then sign for, you know, for a lot less in slot value next year. he would still have a year of leverage to negotiate with. It's a very important aspect of this for Marshawn, and the fact that he's a year away from earning his college degree. So if you get him back, you feel great about that. You get Nori in, you feel great about that. But you're basically advocating for your players like a Hunter Hines, a Connor Hyzak at Dakota Jordan. I mean, you're giving reports to scouts because you want those guys to make as much money as they can and get a head start in life and begin their pro career. And you got other guys, your signees, you're trying to continue to recruit. They're already on your campus, and a dozen of the 14 are already on campus, and then the JUCO guys are expected to be here next month. But you you have an opportunity, you know, to say, hey, listen, you come back, look at what happened for Gerangelo. You know, Gerangelo was drafted in 2022 in the 18th round. Now he's going in the first round. Dakota Jordan turned down money too. Couldn't get the money he wanted out of the draft. Came to college. Now he's likely a back-end first rounder, early second rounder. Going to get life-changing money by coming and playing 2 years. That's important to understand. And so that's a big aspect of this. And, of course, you know, from what I understand, we got a great group of parents with this next baseball class to kind of get it. And there's always one or two out there that you never know, right? You never know what a family's dealing with, you know. And I'll share with something else with you. I think a lot of people undervalue, too. There are a lot of these kids, and they're still kids. There is a sense of guilt. I mean, there is. What I mean by that is it's very expensive to play travel team baseball on an elite team. It's not just the fees of being on the team. It's mom and dad and everybody having to be on the road and all these hotel rooms and eating out and things of that nature. And parents know that going in. We were a travel team baseball family too, so I get it. But there are a lot of these kids that feel like, you know what, I need to be self-sufficient. You know, I don't need my parents. They've already gone into so much debt trying to help me advance my future. And there are a lot of guys out there that they start thinking, you know what, I just need to sign and maybe give my parents some of that money back. And most parents would say, no, you don't. We did this because we love you. But that is something that exists in the minds of many young baseball players, is they have invested so much in me. I don't want them to have to pay for college. I don't get 100% scholarship, you know. I don't want them to have to pay to make all these trips. I want to be able to take care of them for a little while, and especially these guys that come from single-parent families. That's an aspect of it that I don't think people talk about enough. And don't think that Major League executives don't understand that too, you know. They don't always know what's in a guy's heart, but they also understand too there's a very significant financial commitment that's been made on behalf of the family. And they use that. It's like, hey, you know, your parents have paid for this, paid for that. This is a chance for you to kind of take care of yourself and kind of get off their payroll and maybe buy mom a car, you know, as a thank you. I mean, don't think those conversations don't happen. They absolutely do. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. If you are looking to bring a larger group to Starkville, look no further than a Stark Vegas Clubhouse. It doesn't matter if it's midweek. And you know, times are running out. And maybe it's time that you think about, hey, let's get one final get-together as a back-to-school celebration. Before we all go back to school, maybe it's mom and the kids. Maybe it's everybody. Maybe it's a cousin's trip. Maybe it's a couple's trip. Before we all get back into the hustle and bustle of the school year, let's get everybody together. We've got that full-service kitchen. We can take turns cooking each night. Each mom can have a night to fix their favorites. Or I don't care. Maybe you don't even have to cook. Maybe just go eat out or order pizza, whatever. I don't know what you want to do, but I know the best place to do it's the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And put the kids to bed. You got the full-service bar, the wet bar you can utilize there. That back porch area is a great place to sit and enjoy a beverage and watch a sunset and just sit there and hang out. And then, of course, even though it's a little hot these days, you can sit around the fire, just fire that thing up, have a little ambiance out there. It's incredible. Five-bedroom, two-bath, and it's just waiting for you. Yeah, it's 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. Come enjoy Starkville when things aren't so people-y, right? All your favorite shops and favorite restaurants, not nearly as busy during the summer. And I can promise you our Starkville merchants would love to have you. So come be a part of that. And when you Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, their Facebook page comes up, and you can look at all the pictures. You can see for yourself how great a place it is, the old renovated clubhouse for the old country club out there. It's great, great place. And after you Google, you're going to have some booking options pop up too. You're going to have Airbnb, VRBO, and you're going to have the Evolve website. makes a difference to me who you book through. But if you book through Evolve, I can save you some money. Use promo code BSR10, that's BSR10. That gets you 10% off your stay when you stay at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Be glad you did. All right, a lot of discussion about the portal. So here is how I see it. With the draft here, and with so many guys wrapping up visits, I don't think you're going to see a commitment until after the draft. Okay, and I'll tell you why that is. Number one, there are guys that are visiting through the weekend, and there are guys that have visits set up for next week. And a lot of that's post-draft. And not to mention, you wouldn't want a guy visiting in the middle of the draft anyway. I mean, you never know. He may get a call himself, right? And so he needs to be with his family and be able to get in contact with his advisors. It's just not a good time to visit. Not to mention your coaches, they're fielding calls from teams. They're fielding calls from agents and things of that nature. And trying to help the current Diamond Dogs get the best deal possible, right? They're going to have people call and say, hey, coach, what's really the story behind this and what's this guy about? So it's just not a great time. Everybody is going to be busy with the draft. And you're not going to be in a position to really be a good host, you know, when you're constantly having to take those calls. So once we get through the draft, there are going to be some players who are looking for somewhere to go. And the truth of the matter is, if the draft goes the way we'd love for it to, you might actually be done in the portal. Now, right now, you're recruiting thinking, okay, I have to continue to recruit these guys because what if? You know, what if Travis Smith gets drafted? That's the Bulldog portal commitment from Kentucky. I got to replace that arm somewhere. I can't just start a new relationship, you know, on Wednesday. And you got to recruit those guys now. So if Dante Norrie gets drafted and signed, well, I got to find a center fielder somewhere. I need another outfielder. So you continue to recruit those guys now. Now, of course, if Mershon comes back, you know, you don't need another middle infielder. Yeah, if he does sign, you're probably going to need another middle infielder. If Norrie signs, you're going to need another outfielder. Whether he's a center fielder or just an additional outfielder, you're going to need another one. You factor in, you know, Travis Smith, if he goes, you got to find somebody else. It may not have to be a starter, you know. And God forbid, what happens if Pico gets drafted and signs? We're not expecting that. But, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty right now about Mississippi State baseball and what the roster composition is going to look like. Once we get through Tuesday, you got a really good idea of what you've got a hold of. Instead of you having to worry about a dozen names being drafted, that's removed. Then it's about, hey, are these guys drafted late going to sign? You know, that's when you got to get recruiting again. And so it's important for our fans to kind of understand you're not going to, barring something totally unforeseen, you're not going to get a portal commitment until after draft. And I don't know that we bring anybody else in until then, you know. And so, and there's some guys that we've been on we didn't get. There's some guys that elected not to take visits and schedule visits and said, you know what, I found my place. That's happened to us too. We've had some people that have visited us and then not taking the full complement of their visits. It's because of the fact, like, you know, this is where I want to be, you know. And so I just kind of caution you, the next week is going to be a bumpy ride at times, but it's also, I think we're going to have a good end result. But not everything is going to go perfectly. Now, if Dante Norrie doesn't sign, that's not the end of the world for us. If Dave Mershon gets drafted and signed, that's not the end of the world for us. If Travis Smith gets drafted and signed, it's not the end of the world for us. And I think some of that is because we're a little bit oversigned as it is. And so you've kind of prepared some contingencies for every bit of that. But a lot of things will come into focus by close of business on Tuesday. You'll have a really good idea. And by the time we get together again on Monday, I think we're going to have a great idea of what Dante Norrie is going to do. And he is that significant of a player. This is a guy that's really, really good. And I had a scout tell me, if that kid comes to Mississippi State, he'll be the fastest kid to ever wear the uniform. Again, he's the fastest kid in the draft, and that's the best of the best. Can you imagine that guy running down fly balls in the SEC for you? It'd be amazing. And so I'm not going to sit here and tell that there's a scenario where State could get everything, right? You don't lose any signees. Dave Mershon doesn't get drafted. and your portal class comes intact, you know, you may have, again, one of the most athletic lineups in the country. And you've got some guys that Justin Parker could really work with. And that's important to understand. But the thing that I have learned about these drafts, last year is probably the closest thing to perfect we ever had. But there's always something. Like, no matter what we think, and I know what's going to happen, there is that segment of our fan base, everything can go right except for one thing, and then people are going to lose their minds, right? Like, we could get Norray to school, we get through the draft, and maybe we lose Dave Marchand. And we don't want to. He's the heart and soul of our team. But they'll forget about all the good that happened, and they'll focus on that. And so I give you no code of conduct. I'm just going to tell you that a lot of things, there's a lot of moving parts to things right now, and that's going to be cleared up very, very soon. And again, let's not forget, you got a dozen of your 14 prep commitments already enrolled, right? Norrie's one of them. Connor, of course, Connor Barth out there in California just said, you know what, hey, let me get through the draft. He's not expected to go high. We expect him to come to school. Right, we do. He's not really in any mocks or things of that nature, but he just didn't want to have to move all the way out here and then something happened. He gets drafted, and then he has to move back. Right, just didn't want to do that. I understand that aspect of it. And, of course, Charlie Foster. You know, he's another guy, too, that just because of the late timing of his commitment is not with the group. So two of your 14 are just kind of sitting out there. And Charlie's a guy, too, that a lot of people think, you know, guys, he's 96, 97 from the left on a good day. That's real stuff. That's real stuff. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, what he's offered. A lot of these guys are going to get calls. And basically how that's going to work is they're going to say, hey, this is so-and-so with the Seattle Mariners. We've got a pick coming up. Will you sign for $500,000? And they'll be like, nope, I'm sorry, I'm going to go to school. Or, you know, hey, if you make it $1 million, I'll sign. Right? No, we can't do that. We only got $500,000 we can offer you. And so they'll say, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, then they just pick somebody else. You know, they're not going to pick somebody and then have that conversation. They have the conversation before the pick is made, and that's why it's near 100% signing rate the first 10 rounds of the new draft. And, of course, that all started in 2021. You recall in 2020 we had an abbreviated draft that only went 5 rounds, and that decision actually helped Mississippi State win an AFL championship. Do you ever consider that aspect of it? Because if we don't have the abbreviated draft in 2020, Tanner Allen and Rowdy get drafted. And they don't come back. You know, you think about, too, hey, you know, Justin Foscue and Westy got drafted, too. Could you imagine if we actually got to play the 2020 season? How great that'd have been, right, with the team that we had. Been great. A lot of guys on there making a lot of money now playing baseball, you know. And we win the NFL championship at 21 without Foscue and Westy. We might have won it in 2020. Might have. People forget how good McLeod was that year. But I share all that because I want you to be informed about the draft. And a lot of people, you know, come to jeanspage.com. If you got a question, you can ask me on the baseball forum. We never, ever, ever, ever look at you and say, well, you know, what a stupid question. That's never what we do. Even though sometimes there's some questions that make me chuckle. But if you got questions about the draft or where things sit, we're happy to answer them for you. You can join for $1 a month, or excuse me, $1 for your first month right now. That special is going to end here in a few days, but I would encourage you to jump on that. It's 30 days from the day of you signing up. Maybe you're a returning customer. You come be a part of that. And again, I think this portal stuff will be wrapped up for Mississippi State next week. And again, remember last year, Cal Steven on the 31st, right? It's so crazy to think about that aspect of it. We added Cal Steven, and some people said, oh, everybody panned the commitment. I actually went and pulled up that thread when he committed, and I only saw one guy out of about 40 people that had something derogatory to say, and I was like, oh, we could do better than this, basically. It wasn't even anything about Cal directly. It was really more about the fact that, hey, we ought to be getting, you know, Luke Holman or whatever. And now you look at Luke Holman and Cal Steven in the draft. I think last year most people would have said, you know what, Luke Holman is far and away a better pitcher than Cal Steven. I think, you know, and baseball is not about risk, especially early in that. And Holman may be, you know, the risk may be somewhat mitigated because he's got a bigger body of work, right? But Cal Steven's not just a one-year hero. He had a good year at Purdue on a bad team, and he came to Mississippi State and became an All-American. You may see Holman and Cal Steven just go within a few picks of each other. And how interesting would that be? When so many people considered Luke Holman to be the top pitcher in the portal last year, And then he and Cal Steven end up getting drafted around the same spot. That would be interesting, would it not be? All right, remind you too, if you hadn't done so, go to DutyNobleBook.com and you can pre-order the new book. And we encourage you to come float. You need to rest and relax. And so many of you never do that and take time for yourself. You call it self-care, and your idea of self-care is laying in bed on your phone watching Netflix or letting Netflix watch you. And even that, you're still stimulated. Your mind is still at work. Come float with us at True Rest of Starkville. You can call 662-268-7601. I've shared with you guys before, I'm a guy that's struggled with anxiety and depression so much of my life. Nothing has meant more to me than this. Nothing. Nothing has been more effective for me than this. It's allowing my mind to rest a little bit. It's not being stimulated. It's having a chance to just kind of let things calm for a little while. It's improved the quality of my sleep. And now's a good time to come. You know, with school not in session, we're busy, but not as busy. There were some times, you know, back when school's in session and, you know, ball game weekends or whatever, that you basically book up. You know, nowadays, there's availability every day right now. And so take advantage of that. Come see us. You can come to Starkville anyway, right? You can come shop at Campus Book Mart and come float with us, and go get you a nice meal over at the Bulldog Burger Company. And then you can spend the night at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse and then review your mortgage options before you get on closewithblair.com, right? It all works in hand, baby. But listen, you guys have a great weekend. It's been a good week. And again, very, very eventful week for Mississippi State baseball next week. And it won't be long. We'll be in fall camp. And, you know, we'll have one more big recruiting event later this month. And that'll all be interesting too, right? Hey, but again, love you all. Absolutely want whatever you want in your life, good. I want you to have it. It's one. It's my most earnest prayer. When I first got into recovery, I had a sponsor that told me, you know, we talked about prayer and things about that nature. And I had a lot of resentment about a lot of people. A lot of people I thought had done me wrong, and I had done a lot of people wrong. And he goes, Steve, what I want you to do is every morning when you get up, I want you to pray for your enemies. And I want you to pray that, hey, I want God to give that person what I want for myself. And I hated it, but I did it. And then in time that I found that my negative feelings about those people began to kind of diminish. And so maybe that's something you should consider too, you know. I'm the kind of person, I really don't get jealous. I really don't. I want all my friends to win. And not all my friends want me to win. I've learned that too. And people would say they're not really your friends. You know, I can be a friend to somebody that maybe isn't as good a friend to me. Because I think it's sometimes maybe I've got more to give, and I don't mean financially. I just mean from my heart and from my soul to other people. I try to be the best friend that people have as best I can. And so I share that with you. I truly want good things to happen for you in your life. And I hope that you share that sentiment with those people around you. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.